Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome to Indoctrination, a weekly conversation series about protecting yourself from systems of control. I'm your host, Rachel Bernstein.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, as always, to our members on Patreon for helping to keep the show available as a free resource to those affected by cults and high control groups. Thanks also to the organizations who have recently reached out to sponsor the show. You'll be hearing about a couple of them over the next few weeks. Are you a production company looking to ensure your next shoot? Are you a new parent looking to protect your family? Are you looking to supplement your retirement income? Look no further than Allen Schlaefer Insurance Services. With over a decade of experience in both the entertainment world and insurance industry, Allen Schlaefer brings a rare blend of expertise to the table.
Hi, I'm Allen Schlaefer. Before founding my agency, I worked as a production assistant, assistant to the director, voiceover artist, and worked in post-production, doing sound editing, sound design, and music editorial. I've seen the industry from every angle, which is why I know exactly what kind of protection you need.
Allen Schlaefer Insurance Services offers comprehensive production insurance, tailored coverage for businesses and families, unparalleled industry insight.
Our mission is simple, helping people protect their businesses, families, and much more.
So whether you're planning your next big production or looking to secure your family's future, Allen Schlaefer Insurance Services has got you covered.
For more information on production insurance, E&O, or business coverage, go to asisfinancial.com or give me a call. And for a free, no-hassle term life insurance quote, click the Life Insurance tab on my website.
Allen Schlaefer Insurance Services, where industry experience meets insurance expertise. Thanks again to ASIS Financial for their support. If you'd like to contribute to the podcast's success for free, please take a moment to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Your ratings and reviews help others affected by high control groups find the show. It only takes a minute, but makes a big difference in helping us grow our community. For over 20 years, Ann Peterson devoted herself to the training and development company she believed was transforming lives. She even helped launch the public reemergence of the guru behind the organization, Werner Erhard. But ultimately, Anne faced a reckoning. The organization and Erhard were corroding the message that initially sparked her passion. After years of rationalizing away red flags, the harm beneath the surface became undeniable. Anne now focuses on helping others navigate personal development without exploitation, drawing from her experiences to provide guidance on recognizing manipulation. Her new book, Is This a Cult? Confronting the Line Between Transformation and Exploitation, is an inspiring tale of rebuilding integrity in the shadow of charismatic leaders and offers hope to all who wonder whether their quest for growth has a dark side. You can find more info on Anne and her work at isthisacultbook.com. It's my pleasure to have you listen in to my conversation with Anne now. I am delighted and honored to be able to have Anne Peterson with me today. It has been a long time in coming. We've been talking now for a while and wanting to be able to really connect, and being able to meet face to face feels really nice. And I know there's so much to talk about. And so welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm really excited, you know, not just to be here today, but also to have this get to know you. And been learning a lot from indoctrination, and I'm learning how important it is to, one, have mental health professionals in your life, particularly with these kinds of issues. You know, is it a high control group? What have I been a part of? What's been happening to me like that? To have somebody to really sort through that isn't part of the group. That's one of the things, is when you're in a group like the one I was in, Landmark Worldwide, you're taught to take everything inside the group, you know?
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of that. And we hear that almost all the time, that everything is in-house. And so when you bring it to the people, whatever role they have, they often have different names in different groups, but it's basically the same thing of sort of usually talking you out of having the concerns that you have and renewing your faith in the group without really addressing the concerns. And it also, you know, can give you the impression, because it's true, that they're not going to be changing anything. They're just going to be dealing with your feelings around it.
Yeah. And the part about it, it's one of the criticisms that, you know, as they get more critical of me. So I kind of call myself a Landmark whistleblower, because I'm not the only one to speak up publicly, but I'm the only one in 20 some years. And I'm the only one who worked as deeply engaged and inside of the organization, both Landmark and with Werner Erhard, the founder. So, you know, as my book's been making the rounds in that community, it's quite shocking. One, because it's me talking, and I had a good reputation. And for anybody listening, I'm still me. I have not changed a bit. My values have not changed. In fact, that was part of the issue, as I started to find out more and more, you know, kind of bad news about this organization that I was a part of, and I couldn't reconcile it with what I thought I had been a part of. And I elected to continue to be the person I had developed myself to be, not to, you know, not to buy into the lies and so on. But it's one of the complaints is, oh, you know, you got to go to somebody who can do something about it. You know, you go, if you're in a employment situation for the organization, you go to your center manager, and then you go to your center's division director, and then you go to either HR, or you go all the way up to, you know, Harry or Joan or Rosenberg, Joan is the center's, the head of the center's division, which is the primary division. Harry's the CEO. And I can assure you, many, 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 many people have gone all the way to the top and be, you know, many, 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 many times. And then, you know, and then there's also, I'm now finding out about, they've been sued numerous times over the kinds of things I bring to attention in the book. None of the problems that we're talking about do they not know about. And but their way of handling it, and I actually do sincerely believe that they believe this, that they've kind of drank their own Kool-Aid, so to speak, that, you know, anything can be handled in communication. That's one of the core tenets. And that they, I know they've made substantial changes, and I hope those are for the better. I really do, just for people's safety and concern. But they're also going to always say to you, you can handle this with the work. What are you not being responsible for? How can you be accountable for this or that? You know, because the tenet of the work of Landmark is that you are the source of everything that's happening in your life. So it kind of got a built-in gaslighting feature.
Right. It's interesting, a built-in gaslighting feature. The idea that you are the source of everything, you're the cause of everything, you know, that is mimicked in almost all self-help kind of modern or new age kind of thinking, a lot of cultic thinking, a lot of Bible-based thinking. And typically with Bible-based thinking, it's the woman who is responsible for everything bad that happens to everyone. And my feeling is, looking at this psychologically, looking at this kind of sociologically, when you have these absolutes, then you also know they're not going to apply accurately. So because there is within our universe, whether people want to see it or not, randomness. And so things aren't necessarily because of one reason or because of one person. But there is a reason that people are taught to believe that in these groups. Sometimes it helps when people are trying to get out of them and they're trying to break free of the thinking to understand why they were taught that. And if that was for their benefit or if that was for the group's benefit, to make people believe that so that the group, let's say, could get away with doing things to them and they would blame themselves for it happening or they invited it or something. You want to only see what the intention is of what you are being taught. So I know we're jumping in and I realize what I would love to be able to start with is sort of having people hear about who you are and what you do and what led you into Landmark, for people also to know that Landmark got its start as EST. And I remember working with a lot of people and knowing a lot of people who were in EST. And then it switched names and configurations with the forum and Landmark Forum and then Landmark, but it's all the same organization. So if anyone's heard of any of those names, it's all the same thing.
EST, Werner Erhard and Associates. The little known one is for 1 year, it was like transnational something or other. And then Werner Erhard and Associates sells to that then becomes Landmark Education, which then became Landmark Worldwide. And I believe they might potentially be in the midst of yet another something, but I think right now they're planning to stick with the Landmark. I mean, really what it's mostly known to those of us, especially as Gen Xers and stuff, is Landmark.
Landmark, right. And I remember, I think it was in the 70s, a friend of my parents got involved in EST and he then lost a lot of friends. But there was a whole group of friends that got together and they would get together, I think, once a month. It was about six couples. They became really close. And then he started telling people what was wrong with all of them and being in their face and talking really loud and in a forceful tone and being sure that this was right.
That's why they were called S-holes. So as I've been deconstructing this, I'm now really deeply learning about EST and the predecessor organizations. I came in, I participated first, it was either 95 or 96, and it became Landmark in 1991. So, but the background, they used to always say, well, what you fundamentally get out of the forum /S/, you know, da da da, is that you're an asshole and your life doesn't work. There's a movie out there called Transformation, The Life and Legacy of Werner Erhard. It is definitely a bit of a propaganda piece. There's some major lies in there. But it's also, I just watched it the other weekend, it's also a really pretty accurate narrative of how the organization and the people involved in the organization see themselves. It's kind of a self-portrait. And you'll see there's a whole interaction in there. And that was that confrontive style of you're an asshole and your life doesn't work. So then the joke was Estes would go around saying, you're an asshole in your life. Hey, Rachel, did you know you're an asshole?
Yeah, right.
You know, and right. They became known as Estholes. And then Landmark toned that down quite a bit. You know, Landmark was much more, you know, you have blind spots. You know, there's things that you don't know. And those are the things that are actually running your life. Like, you know, Landmark's, the Landmark shift was all about becoming a normal, you know, becoming a secular, just a business, a 1990s, good old fashioned seminar company, personal and professional development. That is their brand. But the work, the ideas are the same. One of the things I point to, and I'll answer your question, kind of give a brief background, but in the book I just wrote, Is This a Cult? Confronting the Line Between Exploitation and Transformation. And I, that title, people accuse me of clickbait. I'm like, no, that was really was my question. Like, that is really the question that I'm grappling with as I tell. It's a memoir of just a little segment of my time, specifically my time as I got to work with Werner. But that Landmark is very sort of dedicated to kind of becoming normal and infiltrating business. They have a whole business division and doing business development and training. And that's the thing about Landmark. Landmark are the kind of the big kids on the human potential personal development landscape.
Yeah, right. And, you know, a lot of the things that I heard about when I first started doing this work, I mean, this was sort of just past, you know, Synanon and the rattlesnake in the mailbox, the whole, you know, and I still look in the mailbox before I put my hand in from that story. And also from Est, where people were taught this idea that people can kind of say or do whatever to you. And if it bothers you, that's on you. And that has still permeated so much of culture now that the whole kind of new age thinking and a lot of coaching and people who are getting into, I think, more unlicensed kind of work are still promoting this idea that if that someone can't make you feel something, which unfortunately protects abusers and protects perpetrators. And it's also factually untrue. We are social beings. There is a reason that we have an impact on each other, and it's often for safety and it's for connection. And so that idea that someone can't make you feel something, again, taken to the extreme across the board, it's never going to be accurate. And I don't know how it helps people. I think it disarms them in a way that that's kind of too disarming.
One quick thing about that, which we'll come back to, that's enough. There's two forks to it. It's on you, which gets me off the hook, totally works for perpetrators. But the other side is it gives you a false sense of power. So as the person, you then have as the person who is causing the matter, it gives you a false, really a false power, which is why it mostly, most LGATs, which that's what Landmark is a large group awareness training, are done in that style. They're kind of moving away from that, I think. In part, they have to because they're going online and it's harder to do. But that kind of high of, I have all the power, which is actually a great segue into my story. So I always say I started my adult life at 15 years old with a baby. I was living on my own since I was 16 with my son. So, and, you know, I'm, for those of you who can't see me, I, you know, even though that was not a good lifestyle, definitely had lots of challenges, but I'm also a tall, pretty white girl. So I had it, in some ways, it was more shock. You know, people were really shocked. How could, like, we expect that of those other kind of, but and I got kicked out of my church, you know, and all of this. Well, I didn't exactly get kicked out. They said I could come to church, but only if I would wait until everybody had left to pick my son up at the daycare because they didn't want other teenagers to see me.
Okay. Yeah.
So right. They didn't exactly kick me out, kind of, you know?
But
it was pretty clear I don't know what they thought they were going to do for me. But anyway, so I sort of lose my community, my church, you know, all that. So then I kind of coming through my young adult life, but I'm like really ambitious and I'm, you know, I'm like going to prove them all wrong. I'm not going to have five more children by the time I'm 21. You know, I'm not going to be on welfare for the rest of my life. I'm not. And I do have a certain amount of privilege given who I am and how I look. And I got a job at McDonald's and I become the earliest McDonald's, you know, youngest McDonald's manager in that region. And I just work my way up. I became a bank teller. I had to be a bank teller because that was so exciting. I got to, you know, wear like a business suit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Official.
So I'm coming through my early 20s. One prediction that I did do, however, is I married the wrong guy. So I married somebody who I thought would take care of me. And turned out I now understand that he had childhood trauma. At the time, what I would come to find out is he was addicted to drugs. He was abusing my son, you know, physically, you know, things like that. And so I'm kind of on the outside. I was like, ooh, I had my perfect life. I had made it. But on the inside was this really volatile relationship. He's cheating on me. He's doing drugs. He's spending all our money, you know, all this stuff. And we're in marriage counseling. I'm like, and at 23, I had my daughter. And 22, 23, she and I, when I was writing the book, we actually figured out, we think I was a little younger than I used to think I was. So she was born in 1984. So, or 94, 92. Anyway, so I have my daughter, but things are really going south in the relationship. And so we're in marriage counseling, and finally he tells me he's going to leave me. So he's going to leave me. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, my whole fantasy life is crumbling. And I call my best friend in the world, and she'd been trying to get me to do this thing called the Landmark Forum for years. And I was like, I remember going to an event at one point, and they have this whole thing that they do about, you know what you know what you don't know, but there's this whole other part of the pie that you don't know, you don't know. And that's where the forum goes to work. Those blind spots. I could still lead it for you perfectly, Rachel. I could enroll you completely. So and I remember telling her though, like, I don't want to know what I don't know. I don't know. You know, there's always a part of you that does know that there's something not right. When something's not right, there's a part of us, and now I'm much more connected to this than I was then, but you know, so we know. And I was like, but to know that he was doing all those things would mean making choices and decisions I was scared to make. So I do the Landmark Forum. I have him do it with me. And and he kind of wigs out. Like now, knowing everything I know now, he probably hit a psychological break. Like he went into a manic state.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And but you're told to separate. Like if you're in the forum with somebody, I don't know if they still do this, but back then you would separate, you know, you can't be with your spouse. You sit next to somebody new every time, et cetera. So I'm like having this great experience because what I'm getting out of the forum is this, I don't actually remember any specific thing. I just remember the power, which I've been having some conversations with some academics that are studying LGADs, Dr. John Hunter lately. And I'm now starting to understand that was, it basically brings you to this hypomania state, but hey, it feels really good. And you're like, I can do anything. And so I walk out of the forum and I tell my husband, yeah, you should leave. You know, yeah, that was a really good idea you had, you know, yeah, we should break up. Of course, he gigs out, you know, because it's not really what he wanted. He wanted the threats and whatever. So that's kind of like the early beginning, but I tell it in that detail and I tell a little bit more in the book, but because I think that's important to the story. Most people do programs like this because they're in some kind of a situation, of a crisis, of a pivotal point in their life, which was definitely true for me. So I went, and then I like speed demon through. I kick out the husband. We end up with restraining orders. Like it's a total mess. We move through that. My marriage counselor does the next forum because he's like, what happened to you? You know, like it's this whole thing. And so I rush through. I do what at that time was called the curriculum for living. So I do the forum. I do the next course, the advanced course. And my best friend had flew out from where she lived in the Midwest to be at my Sunday night of my forum. And she's like, I know I told you it was about the forum, and the forum is where you would be able to make a choice, not a decision about your marriage and all this stuff. But it's really the advanced course. The advanced course is where you create yourself as a possibility. I'm in. And you're like, at this point, I'm like kiting checks to make this work because I, you know, hardly have any money, you know. I pay the whatever it is, $600 and some, $500, whatever it was then. And I do the advanced course. And then I register in the self-expression and leadership course. So their curriculum, boom, from February to September, I've done it all. And I enroll in their leadership development, their leadership training course, which was called at that time, the Introduction to the Forum Leaders Training Program, IFLP.
Okay. And so then how old are you at this point? Like you said, the fast track. So you started at what age and what are you now?
So I'm 26, 27.
Okay.
When all this is kind of happening.
Wow. Okay. Okay. And this is a lot of time commitment too, right?
Oh, huge.
So if you can give a flavor for that, what this meant for you time-wise.
Well, interestingly, so the programs are very intense and they're on a weekend, which, you know, for a working mom, that was kind of good, right? My son's dad was always great in taking him on the weekends and whatever. So I got you know, people. And I had my brother-in-law at the time was living with me. So I was able to get the kids covered pretty easy. I had a lot of support actually in that arena, a lot of family and so on. So, you know, you've got a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or the advanced course was 4 days. I think it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but all day, right? So you're like leaving your house at 7:30 in the morning and you're getting home at like midnight. And all day. That's one of the things with LGATs is really intense hours. And kind of the explanation is, like it used to be 2 weekends and they got it down to one because it's for busy professionals. It's a lot easier to carve out 3 intense days. Now, you know, I'm now learning what intense days do to the brain. So there's a figure in that for that. But, and then I'm volunteering. Oh yeah, I'm volunteering. So I'm doing the programs, but then I'm also volunteering, which is called assisting in their lexicon. They're no longer doing that. They finally had to shut it down in 2023. They shut down their assisting. But for years and years and years, there was volunteering. And I'm volunteering, like I volunteer for another forum. So that's a, you know, I mean, you're talking like 40 hours across a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know, and then you have a Tuesday evening. And as a volunteer, you're coming in early, you're leaving late, you know, all this stuff. So, and then the leadership training program, they tell you're going to be doing 10 hours a week of volunteering. Like if you're barely in the program, like if you're at which nobody's going to let you get away with that, your coaches, you're really 20, 30 hours at least a week. And I was an entrepreneur. I had just started a little building supply business with a friend of mine. So I also have this new little business that I'm running. It's crazy, crazy amount of time.
Okay. I mean, that is quite incredible. I also wonder just about the hard sell, because when people get involved in groups like this, they often find that they're doing a lot more than they originally thought they were going to do. And they're doing a lot more to keep kind of the machine running. How did they get you to volunteer? What was the pitch to have you feel it?
Mania.
Mania.
The part of the pitch is that you're so like, hi, you're so lit up on transformation and possibility. And like, this is the answer. This is the answer the world needs. I was just listening to somebody else in an interview, because there's more people are starting after my book came out. Well, people are starting to talk, which is so great. And look, there's a lot great. Like, you know, to this day, when I look back, like, you know, I've had a great life and I'm now much more willing to take credit for that and not give all the credit to Landmark. But you know, at the time you're like on this high, you're and they're changing the world. Like people are in these programs and they're completing big things. They were raped and they're forgiving their rapists. They're, you know, huge things. And one of the big things you hear, you'll really love, hate, or you'll hate this as a therapist, is, hey, you can do 30 years of therapy or you can do 3 days in the evening, you know, and they're resolving these big issues and it feels really good. And you're with a community. So you're also like-minded people that are talking about, you know, having serious and important conversations about things that matter. And it's kind of only later that you would sort of, you know, I would come to see we did a lot more talking than doing. but that doesn't mean people don't go off and do great things too. Self-expression and leadership program in its back. And then I would go on to lead that program, by the way. I would lead both the leadership training program, IFLP, and self-expression and leadership. People do these community projects, you know, they're setting up restaurants that train homeless people and things like that. There was a big change in the early 2000s. They brought in a new body of work and that program became less about the community project and more about enrolling people in the forum. So this slow migration starts to happen, that all these things that you want to make a difference about in the world, the answer to them becomes getting people to do the Landmark Forum. But it's slow. It's not, you know, and then kind of added to that is, oh, this feeling you're having, this like great thing and these great conversations you're having. Well, you can have those everywhere in your life. Just get everybody in your life to do the Landmark Forum. So your life does become a little bit of your friends who've done the forum and the ones who haven't. And I ultimately, you know, I'm volunteering. I'm all this stuff. I divorced my husband. I'm in the leadership training program. My business is doing okay. It's doing good. And I'm like on top of the world. I'm on top of the world at this point. And I would much later find out my daughter particularly was paying a very high price. I reveal that in my book. But you're high on transformation. You are an integral part of making a world that works for everyone with no one and nothing left out. You'll hear that from graduate after graduate after graduate. the power and magic of transformation being alive and real for all people. Like, you are in for the mission. And here I am. My formal education ended at 9th grade. So I don't have, and I don't have the resources or ability at that point to go back to school. But besides, why would I? Because I found this other thing that's much faster and they're giving me opportunities to lead, you know, to become a leader. And I do. I become a public speaker. Believe it or not, I never used to look people in the face when I talk to them. And I do the leadership program and I learn how to do that. And I learn how to share in a way that moves people that, you know, to take action. Primary action is doing the Lemar Forum. So yeah, it's a heady experience. And when you're in that, so slowly my whole life becomes that. I meet a man, he's still my husband. We're going to celebrate our 25th wedding anniversary this year. So everything in your life is being shaped and colored by this narrative. And, you know, and everything in your life is becoming a share. It's called a vivid share. Like, everything is becoming a share to demonstrate the power and magic of transformation.
So a couple of things I wanted to respond to. One of the things that when people ask me sort of how you define a cult, one of the points of definition that I give is that it becomes your whole life, that you can't do something on the side that is the cult and then still have a thriving separate existence, having nothing to do with it. It becomes you, how you view yourself, how you view the world, how you interact with people, who you spend time with, where you spend your money, where you spend your time. And the language you use, you know, all of it. And so that's interesting that you mention it. And I see this question over your shoulder.
Is this a cult? Is this a cult?
Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's definitely one of the definitions. It's also interesting that, you know, I quote Dr. Margaret Singer a lot, who studied this. We overlapped a little, but she studied it before I did. She's fantastic. She was a fantastic woman. And she would say that when you're in a kind of a controlling system or an occult, you learn to deny the evidence of your senses. And what happens, right? And what happens a lot is exactly as you said, like with your daughter, and we hopefully will have time to get into that, that while you're busy transforming yourself and transforming the world, as it is said to you, is the possibility here. There are people who are not getting the benefit of this right in front of you. And you are on such a high, it's very much like being on a drug where you don't see the people who are being left in your wake as you're coming through with your emotional tornado and feeling very excited and feeling very amped up. And so you might not see who is potentially suffering or just losing out while you're busy, you know, helping the world or helping yourself.
You become kind of like a one-trick pony too, you know, like you've got one set of tools, you know, and even if it's the best tool, it's a great tool. What I tell people a lot now is like, look, I can't build a house with a screwdriver. You got to have a whole array of tools. And Landmark, while they didn't, particularly at a participant level, they definitely at a participant level don't tell you not to participate in other things. They just tell you this is the best thing. And you couple that with the emotional high that you're kind of up on all the time. And there are the low. So it definitely is the take you down to the thing. We even did a whole event that was all about the sewer, going into the sewer, and going to the sewer is the way to get to the top. Or I had a friend tell me one time, I actually still use this analogy from time to time. If you feel like you're drowning, go to the bottom and push up. That's been in our lexicon for a while. And me personally, I kind of blame Werner Erhard. That was an integral piece of the 1971 S training is, you know, remember I said, you're an asshole and your life doesn't work. And as soon as you get what an asshole you are, that's when you'll be liberated. What's funny is the founder never got what an asshole he is. Well, he pretends to, but that's what I reveal in my book. You know, that, like, ultimately, that's what I had to deal with is I'm working fast forward 20 years. And now I've left Landmark's employ, but I'm hosting a program for the founder and, you know, and the source, they call him. And as I'm close in there, all of a sudden I realize, like, wait, there's stuff here that isn't right. And if it doesn't work for him, now you start to question, wait, what really was happening? Wait. But back to the, you know, yeah, early leader, you're definitely, even my daughter, I remember one time she was like in fifth grade and something's happening with the kids at school and she's trying to explain it to me. And of course I'm like, start interacting with her from, well, there's what's happening and there's what you're making it mean. And da 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 da, you know, I'm like, you know, coming with my logic at this poor 11-year-old. And she literally looks at me, mommy, you just don't understand. I'm going to talk to dad, you know? And by this time her dad, because as soon as he did do the forum, but then when I said, oh, that's a good idea, we should separate. Then he decided it was a cult and always railed against my landmark participation. So that was a split. And as you said, you know, well, like my now husband, Dave, his family, his dad does the forum eventually. He worked for Landmark also. He was the center manager. We were kind of the king and queen of the Pacific Northwest Landmark community. Our wedding was a self-expression leadership project, community project about the possibility of relationship. And it was a fabulous wedding. But, you know, it was a culty wedding. Yeah, Sarah Edmonds and I were compared wedding stories a little while. I heard her and Nippy talk about their wedding. And I'm like, oh my God, that was exactly our wedding. The whole community's there. And, you know, we had this declared possibility and all this stuff. And, you know, there's Dave's parents are there. And, you know, they're these very devout Christians, wonderful people, but never like, you know, they didn't condemn us, but they definitely were like not into the Landmark thing.
I want to hear more about your experience. I want to take a moment though and talk about Werner Erhard. So let's talk about Jack.
Jack Rosenberg.
Right? Who has an interesting history and started this group, and what you have come to find out about him and what he's like and how he's different potentially, as many people are in the with these personalities in front of people than they are behind the scenes. So go ahead.
There's a really interesting arc to the Landmark story. So Jack did start as, which I'll circle back that, you know, started out as the older used car salesman, because yes, when he was very young, he did sell cars, but he went on more of his young adult life was selling door to door, I think encyclopedias and then children's books. And, you know, that was quite a thing. People will hardly remember before the internet, but that was quite a thing back in the 60s and 70s, particularly. And of course he was very good at it. And he had a whole crew that worked under him. So it was the very, very, very early ages of MLM, which I find that very interesting. A number of these people, Keith Raniere started with an MLM, like multi-level marketing organization. So that is something that we hear commonly also. And I find that a bit fascinating. And but I also was a salesperson. I mean, I had somebody take me under their wing at 20 and say, I'm going to teach you sales because you'll always have a job. So anyway, he gets involved with Scientology and leadership dynamics and mind dynamics. And, you know, and he's doing all of this, honestly, for the same reasons I did, to become better and better at his sales and his business and making money and all those things, you know. And he's very charismatic and he's very good looking. And he tells this whole great story in the movie about having this epiphany moment in his experience. Kind of this moment of none of it matters. And now we would call it in the forum that we talked about empty and meaningless. Like it's all empty and meaningless. The cars, the houses, it's all da da da. And it's kind of this pseudo religious experience. Honestly, it was probably a manic episode. I mean, when he describes it and you listen to Dr. John Hunter, who is a specialist in bipolar disorder, it's like probably a manic episode. But he decides in that episode, you know, he decides out of that, we're going to start selling courses. We're going to stop selling children's books and we're going to start selling programs. I've learned most of this in the last 4 months and starting the last 3 years, because when I come in to Landmark Education, after S built up and it becomes super famous, and then they retire S and do the forum, and you'll see a lot of that, because basically as registration starts to wane, you got to create something new. Right. So they create the forum, you know, it spreads, it gets way bigger than they ever imagined and all this stuff. But then his reputation takes a giant hit And it takes a giant hit. And the lore, the inside narrative is, it takes a giant hit because L. Ron Hubbard is pissed off that Warner took the ideas of Scientology and is now rich and famous off the ideas of Scientology without giving him any credit. Now, I'm now talking to a bunch of ex-Scientologists. There's some truth to that. He was very pissed. Warner was declared fair game, which is the Scientology.
I've been declared also.
Yes. Have you? Okay.
It's super fun. And it really highlights how much of a spiritual organization they are not. Yes. Go ahead. Yes.
All this stuff, newspaper articles come out in a Marin newspaper. I now have those articles. Literally, somebody found those articles and sent them to me just a few weeks ago, the original articles. Out of those articles comes a 60 Minutes special. Several of his children come forward. He had abandoned his birth family in Philadelphia, but then when they he creates a new course about relationships. So he makes up with his family. All this stuff, right? So all this happening. So his reputation is going to take a hit. The IRS is after him. They weren't actually after him. They were after the guy who set up all his tax stuff, who was this famous Hollywood guy who was basically teaching all these rich people how to like set up all these tax shelters. So Warner kind of gets caught up in that. But he leaves the country. And the story was that he turned the company over. He sold the company over to the employees. And I never heard the specific one, but a number of people told me that they heard it was for a dollar. I just heard he sold it to the employees. I never questioned this narrative because who the employees are his brother and sister, Joan Rosenberg, Harry Rosenberg. But when we come in, he's basically been completely erased from the Landmark lexicon. All we know about Warner is this tiny little bit in a packet that we get how to answer questions in guest rooms if anybody brings up, is this Est? And the answer is no. You know, is Warner? Yes, Warner was the founder of Est, and our Landmark's programs are based in the idea, some of his ideas. He has nothing to do with the organization. Da, 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 da. Now, I now know all of that is bullshit. It's all a lie. It's true in what I say Landmark true, which to the letter of the word, it's true. Yes, there is a sale agreement. I now have that as well. Somebody's found it. It was part of a legal case, an exhibit. And all of the liabilities of the Earhart associate were turned over to this transnational company and who agreed to buy it, not for a dollar. This will be a shock to some people listening, but it was for a $3 million down payment, 2% of the gross proceeds plus 50% of the pre-tax net proceeds for 18 years or $15 million, whatever came soonest. And that was for, they assumed all the liabilities. And that was for the license for the right to deliver the ideas. So they still don't own the ideas. So, which Warner then turns around and sells in all kinds of different ways, different times. But he still stays really loyal to, you know, Landmark, but very, very, very far in the background. So when I come in, I'm like, Warner who? Like, I don't know anything about that. And I remember my ex-husband, once he decided that it was a cult, he's like, oh, it was founded by this cult leader, Werner Earhart, who was a used car salesman who abandoned his kids and da-da-da-da. Well, I already had the inside story. Like, all that was a hit job by Scientology.
Oh, I see. Okay. Right.
Right. All that was a hit job by Scientology. And yes, he did do those things. In fact, it was so amazing, Rachel. Like, he totally, you know, went back 13 years later and cleaned up with his family. What an asshole he had been. Member, you're an asshole. And that your access to transformation is by getting what an asshole you are. And that's very pivotal to the whole thing. And so he did that. And isn't that amazing? And they're just like painting it in a bad light because they Scientologists want to take him down and la, 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 la. That's the whole mood of it. So all of that. So I do from 19, whatever it was, 95, I'm a leader by 97. And then by about 1999, 2000, I became a leader of kind of this specialty program for graduates called the Wisdom Course. So I kind of exit the main division of Landmark called the Centers Division. That's where the bulk of business happens. And I become this kind of like specialty leader, which I later found out very recently. Thank you, Chris Shelton. It's very much Landmark's version of consulting services. But that was sort of our job. And we had this great course, but only senior graduates could do it. And it was great. I mean, to this day, if I could lead that course, I still would. It was fabulous. It was very, very different than the center's program. Our job was to listen to people. It was to ask questions so as to listen. And so it had a very, very different bent. It was not about intervening on people's thinking or way of operating. It wasn't about convincing them of anything. It was very much about an exploration of who we are as human beings, as a linguistic abstraction, basically, as a network of, conversational network. So now we're kind of done with the person. You did all that in the center's division. You dealt with all your like assholery and there. So now we're going to take a different look at human being from the perspective of societal conversational norms and how that shaped the way you think and the way that you move. And it was done from a very different approach, which was this listening approach rather than intervening. So basically, I always say it like this. If Landmark were the United States, I went off to Kauai, up to the land of flowers and happy. We did vacation programs. I end up going on staff, which now means I have the same schedule as a forum leader. So I'm not leading just one of these courses, but I have a big and staff. To be staff in Landmark is to be somebody who has said yourself to be the enterprise. You have constituted yourself as the enterprise fulfilled.
Right. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about Landmark and identity, right? Because part of going back to this idea of the definition of a cult, that it becomes your whole life, it becomes you, it becomes all of you, and it becomes how you define yourself and see yourself, and everything else is less important, I think, or not important at all.
For sure, shaped by that. So your entire life needs to be an expression, not of Ann Peterson. An expression of the work of the enterprise fulfilled.
Okay. So then how did you need to see yourself while being a Landmark leader?
I saw myself as Wisdom Course leader. I saw myself as Landmark and its mission and what it stood for fulfilled. I was a living embodiment of that. Who I am is... And they literally have these events where you could create, you could say yourself accountable for. To be accountable for meant that you constituted yourself as that. And then there's a whole integrity model where you really get into integrity isn't something you say, it's who you are, but through your word. So I give my word to be the fulfillment. One of them was LEC 2020. That gets revamped a few times. Think of it as like a mission statement. So I'm not like committing to the mission statement. I am the mission statement. And then I take on a role, a specific role that's part of the fulfillment of that. So my role was Wisdom Course leader and staff member and assisting program manager. And, you know, they have these roles, right? So, but my primary one was Wisdom Course leader. And weirdly enough, Rachel, I still actually think of myself as Wisdom Course leader. Like it's in my DNA. I actually feel like I'm a better Wisdom Course leader now than I was then, but that would be very upsetting to Landmark. This book is me being a Wisdom Course leader, like to me, because what I learned was, you know, you are like what we say as a society. And you know what? As a society, we say it ain't okay to hurt people. So when I started seeing people hurt, it created a big existential crisis for me, but kind of one of their own making in a way. Because I couldn't be who I thought I had created myself to be and tolerate, walk by this. One of the chapters of my book is walking by the trash, because Werner used to say this thing, you're going to walk by the trash. Meaning, you know, if you say you're somebody who's for a world that works for everyone with no one and nothing left out, I mean, I don't drive by homeless people and without dropping a dollar in the cup. Because who I am is... who I've said myself in my past to be, I don't regard myself as that anymore, but I do like that. I am still for those things. You know, I am for a world where everybody has an equitable shot at health, safety, world, like, and my whole life I will live in service of that. That's not going to change. See, what I've come to understand is I was that before I found Lamp, in a way, right? That's why I resonated so much with it. But in the organization, that's what they use. Chris Shelton introduced me to a term, weaponized empaths. And, you know, and if you look even at Werner's history, you know, sales were lagging. He created the Hunger Project, which was at the time, it's now, I want to be very clear for anybody listening, the Hunger Project is an extraordinary organization that I actually endorse and support to this day. When they broke off with Werner in 90, they never went back, and they really have do some amazing work around the world. But when he creates it back in the 70s, it's, you know, he's going to, you know, the end of hunger is a time who's come or something like that. I can't remember the exact slogan. But they send people out all over the streets, getting people to sign these cards saying, I say that the end of hunger is the, you know, whose time has come. And then people go like, oh my gosh, this is an amazing, bold stand. This is in the 70s. And they're like, so why are you doing this? Oh, because I'm a Landmark Forum graduate and this is what we do. Would you like to know about the Landmark Forum? Long before those tips and tricks were a thing. You know, now you can take, right? That's what I mean. He's a smart man. So yeah, you really do constitute, and there's a whole thing about you're an apprentice and then a candidate and then designated. Well, by the time you hit designation, that's what it is. The other designated people have said, okay, that Rachel, yep, she's it. She's a wisdom course leader. And it's totally subjective. So that also keeps people reaching to get to that. But ultimately, what you are saying when you say that is that you have constituted yourself and everything goes behind that. And forum leaders who are kind of like the core leaders in that, or they actually, like their spouses have to agree to be second to Landmark.
Right. I was going to actually ask about the hierarchy. And it's interesting, you mentioned the Hunger Project. It got off to a really rocky start. I remember going to some of their talks because, you know, I always like to check things out firsthand. And initially it was that the money was coming in to educate people about hunger. And I remember someone in the audience when I went to go to this talk said, well, you know, is food bought and distributed? And they said, we are an educational awareness organization. So it's to educate and make people aware. And then I think they realized with all these questions they were getting, like, well, we're going to be making a donation so that you can keep going around and talking about how hunger happens. We already know that. And so they needed to add this other part on where they actually tried to feed people. It's like, you can't have a hunger project that's just telling people, yeah, people are hungry.
Conversation whose time has come to end or something. I wish I could remember the exact slogan. I actually have the source document that it says Werner, supposedly kind of put out like Werner wrote it, but actually this other guy wrote it. And, you know, Werner put a few things in it, which is another comment. Not that Werner isn't a really smart and brilliant man, but almost everything that he's done, and here's how he would say it, he rode the coattails of another. So he, you know, he would get together, somebody was sharing with me yesterday, I now have all these people coming and talking to me and telling me all the stories, because I didn't really know. I came in and I said, I would come in 2012 to work with, I met Werner in 2010. And then by 2012, I started hosting a program for him that was about, it was a little bit of a mini revival, bringing Werner sort of back out of obscurity around this project to develop a program that he and the group of colleagues he was working with about leadership. It was called Being a Leader in the Effective Exercise of Leadership, an Ontological Phenomenological Model, which I do want everybody to know, I know how to spell all those words. And they were going to develop this course and give it away to academia. And partially because he had partnered up with Mike Jensen, who is an extraordinary man. It was really my love of him that got me in on that project, actually, not Werner, which was kind of always a problem because I wasn't quite in the Werner sycophantry club, which I thought made me very effective in doing what they had asked me to do, which is host this course and raise money for this initiative to develop this program, give it away, and train college professors and lecturers. And I want to be clear that everybody who was involved in that project was for that. And I think Werner was for it because he thought it would legitimize his reputation. But, you know, Mike Jensen was really passionate about maybe there being colleges that studied the ontological, which is the study of being, how to bring that into education. Like he had a real passion for something. And Jerry Echevarria, who kind of runs the what's left of it today, incredible woman who really is passionate about this unique approach to leadership that promises to leave people not just knowing a bunch of stuff about leadership, but actually being leaders for themselves. That's what's at the heart of landmark style work. That's what they'll tell you. We do work in the ontological model, work that our programs are going to leave you being some way, source of being. And if you're at the source of being, your beingness, your actions will naturally correlate to that way of being. That's the whole philosophy.
Interesting. Right. So I want to be able to talk also about the after effects, but first I want to be able to hear about your progression, sort of when you decided that it was time to go. I mean, knowing how devoted you were, how knowledgeable you were, how this had become your existence for so long, and you had reached this pinnacle, which is hard to forfeit. You have to be really serious about what you're seeing and how much it's bothering you to want to kind of take a crown off, not know if there's another one out there for you. That is a very difficult thing.
That's really what my book, the day I published on my book, it was a little bit before that privately, but that was when I publicly took the crown off, which was a big deal though, right? Because public is different than private. But I did leave Landmark in 2012. In part, I'd had an experience in 2000 and when the Katrina happened. My husband had, we had a deal that only one of us could be on staff at a time because it doesn't pay anything. And so somebody had to be making the money to support our family. So we had moved here to Dallas and we were working with he had a partner who was also, everybody in our life is a Landmark graduate. It's great to meet you, Rachel. I think you're one of the handful of non-Landmark graduates I know. but anyway, so we had this, he had this business developing and managing hotel properties in the hotel that he was managing it. He was actually the interim manager at the time in downtown Dallas when the evacuation happened. And we had the Greyhound bus contract. The Greyhound bus drivers would stay with us when they're running back and forth. They started bringing us evacuees. And a number of people had evacuated. It was a Quality Inn. And it became dubbed, by the media, it became dubbed Hotel Katrina, because we ended up turning our hotel into a relief and relocation center. So for 5.5 weeks, you know, my husband and I stood in the lobby and whatever came in, we said yes, whatever guest it was, whatever donations it was, whatever. And it literally became a relief and relocation center. And what was interesting at the time, I happened to be sort of failing in my accountability as a wisdom course leader. Now I was failing because I had a job. It was actually the job of like 6 people. It's the common thing you'll hear a lot in Landmark, and you'll hear a lot as more and more people talk. They'll talk a lot about how they had impossible jobs. We did have an impossible job, and we gave our word to the impossible. That's what it is to be responsible, to be a Landmark staff member, is to give your word, throw your hat, you know, yes, I will produce a 10% increase year over year. For that year, I had 5 courses, five programs. I know nobody's ever done it successfully for more than 2, but they were only working part-time. Except for there is no part-time. Part-time at Landmark is 40 hours. Full-time is 62, like officially. But most staff people you'll hear work between 70 and 80, and then they volunteer on top of that. So it's a solid, 100 hours a week.
And making, what did you make, or what could people make as a staff person?
Oh, I was super high paid. I don't remember my exact salary, but it was in the neighborhood of like $55,000 or something.
Mm-hmm.
That was and high.
That was for 60 some odd hours a week.
No, I wasn't hourly. I was a program leader. At one point, I told them to take me off staff and make me an employee, which is another distinction that only makes sense from the inside. It's not actually a thing in the world. But I went from being an employee to a contractor at that point, but I kept my pay the same. Main thing that happened is I didn't have medical insurance and I didn't have to be on the all staff calls, which any staff member listening to this will laugh. It was such a blessing.
Okay.
Great.
I take it. All right.
I got a few hours back, but
you did. Okay.
You're working. It is not about time. You have a promise. You are working what you constituted yourself as that promise. So whatever it takes to make that promise, that's what you're on the hook for. Why I mentioned that is because when that happened, it was such a miracle. Like what happened there was so incredible. And I kind of literally had this insight like, oh, up to that point, I thought I would be a landmark leader forever. It was the highest, biggest thing I could ever imagine to contribute in the world. And in that experience, I was like, ooh, wait, no, I could take all these skills I've developed and look what we just did. We created a home for over 800 Katrina evacuees. We were getting them into apartments. We were all this stuff. That was the beginning of the end. But that was, what was Katrina, 2005? I still don't leave for like 6 more years. So as I'm working, you know, but that really did kind of interestingly mark, that was when the total hold was, the hold on Landmark working there and that exact expression kind of broke loose for me. So fast forward, I'm going along, you know, continuing to work really hard. I'm starting to get really sick. I do have an autoimmune condition. This is another thing you'll hear from almost all ex-staff members. They're sick. So they're going to be sick in some way, probably life-altering sick, right? Some of them have, that's your only way. Most people, that's how they get off staff, is they get sick. You get sick or you die. Pregnancy can get you out too. They don't like that when you get pregnant. I've now heard from a number of people pretty horrific stories of what happened when they got pregnant as a staff member. But because your life, you're for the cause. Like you really got to put, so that kind of breaks with the Katrina thing. That fever breaks a little bit for me, but I'm still in. I'm still challenged. I'm still like developing myself to be a high performer, blah, blah, blah. And I remember exactly what it was, but I knew my time was coming to an end, like that it was time for me to leave. I wanted to get out of the Landmark set and I wanted to get in the bigger world. I was kind of jealous of my participants that were out there like running these big businesses and making a lot of money and doing big things.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. Very interesting. I'm wondering also just, I've had the experience, and I know I talked to you briefly about this, of talking to a lot of people who have left this group and others not dissimilar from it, like Insight Seminars and Sterling, a lot of other places, where they are left having this very halting way of talking because they're second guessing themselves as they're saying something, as they're feeling something, as they're even asking for help. Do they have the right to ask for help? Are they complaining? Are they playing the victim? Are they deserving of having a happy life? Are they just going to cause another, you know, cascade of problems for themselves? So what's the point? All of the teachings get integrated into, I think, this cacophony that causes people to be able to just make a comment, ask for help, say something with assurance, and be able to feel okay about it. But instead, I hear like this delay between sentences, like where someone might say, yeah, I think I need help. I went to Landmark and then there's this stop. And I've now started asking people, what's going on in your mind right now? What are you saying to yourself before you get to even after the comma in the middle of a sentence? Well, I was asking, do I have the right? Is this real? Am I being a whiner or am I being the victim? Is this going to be helping me? How am I coming across? What does this person think of me? Blah, all the thing. So there's so much dialogue in your head that then you don't feel self-actualization. You don't feel strong. You don't feel sure. You don't feel aware of yourself. In fact, you're a lot less aware. It's like you have to discard all of the second guessing you've been taught to have and all of the doubting you've been taught to have and all of the self-criticism you've been taught to have so that you can even just have a clear thought and you can have a clear reflection of the self and know that it has merit and know that it has value and know that it's real and that you deserve to be able to feel better.
Yeah.
It's really difficult.
Well, there's all of these types of trainings. And, you know, Landmark is, like I said, they're kind of the king of the hill, you know, context, insights. We could go, you know, on Sterling even, like so many of these are spinoffs of EST, essentially, more EST, some Landmark, but mostly EST, right? You're going to find, I believe Sterling was in the EST trainer program or he had some correlation. But if you draw them back, you'll almost always end up at EST. Est or Scientology. But Scientology is much meaner, you know. I mean, Landmark's pretty nasty when you leave, but Scientology, they ain't got nothing on Scientology. So, but it's a constant double bind, because if one, you're bound by the super high experience. So I really love Dr. John Hunter's work. I was so grateful to find listening to everything he puts out. He just sent me his doctoral paper. I'm looking forward to reading it, because he describes it so well. Like, you have this super high, like almost like religious experience, like, whoa. And that's what your body remembers. And you can't then go, but don't trust that. It doesn't, like, it's like, I'm from Seattle, right? Earthquake, nothing's more unsettling than the earth moving, because the earth doesn't move, you know. Like, you're not supposed to happen. So it's very, very like viscerally upsetting when the earth moves. And I live in tornado country, not nearly as upsetting as when the earth moves. But it is that kind of experience. When you do the Landmark Forum, your earth moves. And whether it's a healthy move or an unhealthy move, honestly, there's no real statistics. There's no way to say, because they won't ever count. You know, but I do believe that for the majority of people, it moves in a way that feels positive. And Brian Noor can speak a little, because he was a center's manager. My husband could talk. He was a center manager. So the center managers had to deal with, you know, the 2, 3, 4 people that came out of every forum with what they call a well-being out. Like, that means something's going on psychologically and they're not psychologically safe somehow. So, but mostly you have this, I mean, mania feels amazing. So you have this kind of mania experience, and that's a high. It's the few studies that have been done on it says it lasts 7 to 10 days. In that 7 to 10 days, hopefully you're not making big life decisions, but most people are. So, and that's a little bit like a crapshoot, like that. Like in my case, that was probably good to get a divorce, but I bet you there's lots of people who've gotten divorced or separated, and that wasn't a good thing. So it's a kind of, it sets, so then it says, so then this thing about responsible, you're a cause in the matter. You can be accountable for all of it. If the light turns green, you did that. Like you can own and be the source of everything and all of it in your life. And it's a kind of spiritual and emotional bypassing. I've started a Facebook group for people who are kind of questioning what's going on in their LGAT, you know, high control group. But we're exploring these ideas. We're learning, we're training ourselves. And one of the biggest things people are dealing with is that they don't know what they feel. You know, very excited that, you know, you're going to be coming in. Doing, we're going to host you to do some therapeutic groups specifically for people on these experiences, which I'm so grateful for and super excited about. But that's going to be one of the big things. Like, I mean, I've had to train myself. The thing that I benefited from when I left in 2012, started my own business, was hosting Werner. So I was still in the family. That's why I say my crown didn't really come off. Because look, I went from, you know, being well-regarded, pretty, you know, senior in the organization that is Landmark, over to the king's house. And then I was like the person hosting him. And my book is really about that story, like what that was like. I tell you all the fun stories about going to Abu Dhabi and all that, you know, like that was really like that. So I kind of got a bigger crowd, but I also got some distance. And I did start participating in other things. I participated in the Ridwan School Diamond Approach, which is something, a spiritual study path I just absolutely love. I was really curious, like, what's happening below the neck? I knew that I was shut down. I started doing, you know, more physical work, and, you know, I started taking care of my health, and I read avidly, and, you know, learning about a lot of different things and stuff. All that starts to come in, but I still had the Landmark crown. You know, I call it the WWW, Wacky World of Werner. I had the Wacky World of Werner crown. But now I like have a really big one, because I'm like next to the dude, you know, and all the high level people that are coming, you know, coming in every year to see them. I'm the one who's talking to them on the phone, greeting them, bringing them in, you know. So that was very high. And that had its own destruction in a way, because I even got a little bit more alienated from some people in my life, including some of my Landmark friends, because, you know, they were like, we always said we would never become Werner sycophants. And here you are, like, Werner this, Werner that, you know, whatever. Because my life is now hosting this program, and he's pretty high needs. So,
Right. Yeah.
That disconnect you're talking about, I think it's in part that you've been told that, like, the access to this high is owning all of it, being responsible for all of it, being in high integrity. And integrity's got a very, there's a whole paper on it. I can send it to you. You know, got a very specific definition and a set of practices. And you should be, and then now bring that together with our highly hyper individualized culture that, you know, you should be able to handle anything and everything on your own. I mean, there's still legacy of that is still pretty deep in our societal norms. And it doesn't help when you have groups like Landmark going, well, you can do our thing instead of that therapy.
Right.
I now am a therapist, a spiritual teacher, and a coach.
Nice. Wait. I'm wondering, you know, with the things that you were just highlighting, some of the things that you learned that are not so healthy to take on in their extreme form like that, in their absolute kind of form like that. You know, when you're taught about things like integrity, also across the board, so many people are held up to a certain sense of responsibility and integrity. You then get the impression that the person who has set up this system that cares so much about integrity is someone who has integrity.
Oh yeah, you never question their integrity. Never.
Right? Because
that's their whole system.
That's their whole system, right? So why would you think that they wouldn't have it? And then it's very hard. It was very hard for people when suddenly Werner Erhard was brought up on all these charges and you know, his family, I mean, all the things. And people were wondering about, you know, the integrity from then the top down. And why is it that I find, you know, time and time again that the rules seem to apply only to the others, not to the leadership or really not to the founder. And the rules, the laws, all of it apply, the edicts about what are the goals and how you should be in your life and how you should hold yourself, especially with accountability. And so it can feel like a betrayal.
That's chapter 8 of my book, Betrayed, you know, and watch out what thread you pull. Because once you kind of pull up enough from the hurt of the betrayal, my betrayal wasn't even that Werner, you know, I find out that Werner's actually physically harming his people. Like that starts, that like ticks something. But then when Landmark, some of these people go to Landmark for help with this to his brother and it gets completely denied and da-da, that's when my heart broke. Because that was when I started pulling this thread, like, wait, maybe this organization isn't really what I thought it was. I'd already seen its foibles. But look, it's a human organization. So it's an organization run by humans. Humans are full of foibles. That's what our work's about. But they've got a big mission. They're doing their best. They're constantly putting the work to work on themselves, blah, blah, blah. All the stuff that I was doing, that my friends around me were doing. But now, I mean, what I've learned since this book came out would literally turn your hair white. Like, I'm so disgusted at the depths to which this organization and the people who run it do not follow their own work and the amount of damage that they have created because of that double standard. It's literally hard to fathom. And I'm hearing daily stories from people that is just, and it's that exact double standard. You know, I mean, this is an organization that nobody should ever work for. I mean, the work environment is horrendous. So how can you be an organization that stands for a world that works for everyone with no one and nothing left out, but be setting your staff up to be working hundreds of hours, sick, unable to take care of themselves, unable to be with, except one of the big defenses why they're not a cult. And I leave that question. I come to what my answer is in the book, but I really leave the question. I think each person needs to answer that question for themselves. But how can they be doing that? How are they doing? So they don't separate. They don't say, oh, you can't see your mom and dad, but they do say, well, you're going to work 100 hours a week. You know, you're going to work from, you know, 8:30, 9 a.m. to 12 midnight at night. If you can squeeze in a few things here and there, good for you. And also, I mean, I'm now hearing story after story where people were coached to, you're a staff member. You need to make up with your father. I don't care that he's abusing your brother and sister. Like, you know, because you need to be a demonstration of the work. And that's a big thing that happens in the forum is people get complete with their parents and all of these sort of psychological shortcuts and tropes that we've heard. And And I'm really like a big part of what for me was going on in Landmark is Landmark. And I issue a challenge at the end of my book, which is to either wake up and become a part of what I see as the future of personal and professional development, which is a stand for the safe and ethical practice of it. I've partnered with the folks at Seek Safely. That's kind of where I've come enough through my own anger and grief and upset and to want to kind of contribute back. And at the same time, since the book came out, I'm now hearing hundreds and literally hundreds, I can now say with integrity, Landmark, if you're listening, that stories of staff members and program leaders and even high-level people who assist experiencing the hypocrisy, abuse. I like actually looked up in the dictionary, what is abuse? Started talking to people like you to find out, wait, what's the difference? Is assault and abuse and what constitutes that? And I can say that Landmark in its practices have been, Harry Rosenberg pointed out to me recently, I haven't been there in a while, and that's true. But Harry, a lot of people talk to me that have been there recently. But for sure, in its history, you know, as much as 2022 and back, has been an incredibly abusive, exploitive environment to its own people. So that in and of itself is a total hypocrisy for what it says it stands for.
Right. Incredible. Okay. So I know we're about done with time, but I'm
always up for more.
Okay.
Do another bath.
I would love to. I'd love to have you back. I'd love for people to hear about where to find your book and other work and how to be in touch with you.
I did set up a webpage, isthisacultbook.com.
Okay. Well, it was really important to talk to you about this. I think that this is something that's going to surprise a lot of people to hear. And that's part of the reason that it's important to talk about it, because this organization is like a number of others where they have a positive reputation or even just a neutral reputation. Like, whoa, isn't that place that does the thing? And so for you to be able to bring these stories to light, to honor your own story and to honor the stories of other people and to help people realize that even if something has a certain reputation in the public eye, it's still important to do your research. And so thank you. Thank you so much. And I know we will be in touch.
Absolutely.
One more thing before you go. Thank you so much to Anne for all that she does and for the book that she wrote, which has been quite an experience for her. These people who are very devoted to Landmark and to other groups like it are virulent, are sometimes highly aggressive. And so you know that when you've been involved in an organization for a long time, and you have a lot of information then that the organization may not want people to know, and you also know how people in the organization have been taught to treat others who are sharing the secrets or who are revealing the darker side, then you know what you're going to be getting to a certain degree and that it's not going to feel good, but you still push through if telling the truth and your truth matters. And so it takes more bravery, I think, than people realize to do what Anne has done and others who have come forward who really know what they're talking about. This is an organization that's been around for a long time in many forms, many different iterations, and under different names, but it's the same, from the same origin. And so there are times that people have heard me speak on the podcast about why I still try to keep tabs on a group, even if I don't recognize the name of it, because doing some research on it might help me see that it's the kind of brand new way of packaging an organization that has hurt people in the past, has been a problem, has been an organization where people have come to me for help because they feel that it really toyed with them, played with them, made their life harder. And while I have heard that people have been helped through their EST involvement, their EST training, their forum training, their landmark training, the different names that we've all come across who have followed this organization, it's all the same thing. But what you also notice is that sometimes people have been played with in ways that they didn't sign up for and they didn't realize were happening to them. There are so many absolutes that are provided for people in this group. Absolutes in a way where our human nature gravitates towards them. We like when we're told what is and what's true and the formula to follow so that we know how to keep ourselves safe and to keep ourselves wise and to keep ourselves happy. But there's so many things that people who have been in Landmark and who are instructors there have told me that are rummaging around in their mind because they were said in such sure ways. Like when Anne said she learned the following phrase, you can spend 30 years in therapy or 3 days in Landmark, which is just a made up group of numbers and an equation that actually doesn't come together. Because yeah, you can spend 3 days in Landmark and get some things from it, but you can also get nothing from it, or you can be hurt by it. So the way, though, that it's talked about is it's instead of you're 30 years in therapy and you no longer need therapy and you don't have to pursue that and just come here for 3 days. And so it is a false equivalency. And yes, there are some people who have wasted lots of time, but that kind of statement is going to give you this false sense about all the healing and all the wonderfulness and all the insight you will get just from 3 days. And I know there are some people who will leave after 3 days and feel very high and feel really charged up. And sometimes with some bits of information that are interesting to them, but they, along with many other people, are going to be left with a lot of false information, a lot of things that then they take away that they say as facts that aren't facts at all, or ways that they're taught to look at themselves that are not true at all. There is something also about not being able to feel, not being able to be angry, not being able to be resentful, not being able to hold someone to what they've done to you. That is a mainstay of Landmark, like when Anne said you're supposed to get right, quote unquote, with your parents, even if they are abusing you or your siblings. Because getting right with them will keep everything balanced, will keep you somehow happy, will keep your family system going well. But where in there does someone get to be mad about what happened to them? Where in there does someone get to pursue justice? Where in there does the person who has done the abusing have to take responsibility or deal with the consequences of what they've done, which means that sometimes a family member is not going to want to get right with you if you didn't treat them right. And that is their right. There are so many things that Werner Erhard taught that he also learned from Scientology. But he was very good at making people doubt themselves and question themselves. He was very good at unraveling people while making them feel that he was getting them all in tip-top shape. And there's a reason for that. And in part, it's sort of a dark reason. I mean, this is a business. And so in order to sell a product, in order to have repeat customers, you have to make sure that they need you. And so if after 3 days, if this were really true, that you'd be fine, and it's the equivalent of being in 30 years of therapy, then Landmark would have ended many years ago. But it's because they want you to feel you're getting something from it, but all the while there's this undercurrent of making you feel like you're not okay the way you are. That you need to somehow look at how you have to transform yourself. Here you're taught, on the one hand, you're fine, everything's fine, you're good the way you are. But then if the whole goal is for transformation, and that's their bread and butter, then they're going to make sure that you constantly feel there's more for you to work on. So are you fine? Or do you need to be transformed? People leave very confused, feeling like they think they're stronger, they think they're clearer, they think they're happier, but they know inside they're not. And they know that things haven't been resolved. And they know that things have happened now at Landmark and before at the Forum and before at EST that were not okay. And there isn't a place to go complain about it. There isn't a place to talk about it. There's nobody who wants to hear that because that's just you playing the victim card. And so you're left then not only still having a lot of the things to work on that you needed to work on before, but now you have all this unresolved stuff from your time there. And of course, they will tell you, like any other, you know, card-carrying cultic group, if you're left having these feelings, we have a workshop for that. We have a class for that. We have people you can talk to get help for that. And then you feel gratitude that they can help you, and often forgetting they're the ones who caused the problem that then they say they can help you with. It just goes on and on and on from there. But I'm really glad that Anne has been able to pull herself away from this and she can look at the harder parts of it. And she doesn't have to just be happy with what she got. That she gets to honor her resentment. She gets to honor her anger. She gets to honor the losses. The loss of time, the loss of money, the loss of friendships. Of course, they'll drop you when you leave. But the loss of what it was supposed to be and what she thought it was that she was devoting her life to. Thank you again, Anne, for talking to us today. Take care, everyone. Talk to you next week.
Thank you very much for listening. Please support Indoctrination on Patreon at patreon.com/indoctrination. Be sure to give us a follow on our social media. Find us on Facebook and Instagram using @indoctrinationpodcast. And for Twitter, find us @_indoctrination. We love hearing from you too. So send us an email at indoctrinationshow@gmail.com. And for more updates on the show, visit our website at www.podpage.com/indoctrination.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.